Review, review, review.
Ba 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 bum bum.
Review, review, review.
Ba 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 bum bum.
Review, review, review. Re review, re review.
With me and you. Ba 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 bum. Welcome to our Time to Show Up review episode, where Natalie and I take a deeper dive into last week's interview.
If you hadn't had the chance to listen to that yet, you might want to check it out before listening further here. It'll make a lot more sense that way.
That's right, because in this episode, we will be talking more about the theory behind the material that came up in that interview so we can better understand the elements that were going on there.
We'll also be suggesting reading, practices, and models that may help listeners like yourself who are experiencing resonant challenges and opportunities in their own lives.
In this, our first season of Time to Show Up, we're making all of our content freely available to the public. But in the future, these review episodes will only be available within our subscriber community.
Members of this community will have access to all Time to Show Up content, plus additional resources, materials, access to online forums, live events, and small groups.
Since we know that just listening to stuff isn't usually enough to facilitate desired change, we've designed this community to give you the support you need to take your learning even further. And if you join us at the start of our journey and sign up before April 5th, 2024, we're offering a no-strings, 3-month membership for free at timetoshowup.org.
That's right. And if you choose to stay on with us, which we hope you will, we'll give you a 25% early bird discount just to say thank you. If you're tuning in after that April date, don't worry, you can still try out a free 2-week membership with no obligation. There are different packages to choose from, and you can find out more and get in touch at timetoshowup.org.
So without further ado.
Hello again. We have just been in conversation with Brian Solis, and we're going to recap and explore some of the key themes that we touched on in our session together. So where should we begin?
Well, what I thought was so remarkable about the conversation with him is this concept of drive.
Yeah.
And he said that like everybody has this and they're hindered by mm-hmm. it. But I think I've seen few people who have it or had it to the degree that he had it and described it. And what came up several times was this sense of, I had to do this, I needed to do this. And I think you might agree that like in so many of our conversations, people are like searching for a calling or searching for how to manifest some kind of like faintly,
right? Barely audible.
Yes. But like with him, it seems almost the reverse. And we'll talk about what's happening now, which has changed, but that he was motivated by a massive, seemingly unquestioned drive that only seems to have kind of abated probably around
midlife
and pandemic and stuff like that, and where things started to reshift.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's almost like this sense of an imperative, of an unquestioned pull or push, like this kind of sense of there isn't another choice. It felt like it was the only thing that was possible. And I found it fascinating, the quality. So he used the word ignorance. And I was wondering, actually, sort of mapping it out onto my own experiences, also naivety of you don't know when you're very young what you don't know. So you don't know what there is to overcome. You don't know what might go wrong. And so it's not so much an ignorance of willful ignorance. It's just a not knowing.
You just don't know what the risks are.
Yeah, you just don't know what the risks are. And so that sense of that fire and drive of youth coupled with the lack of knowledge, fewer dependents, that allows you to take a different type of risk without feeling it so acutely as perhaps when you have a career that's been built up in a particular way, that you're looking backwards, you're making sense of it, you're established as a figure, you came of age at a particular time. Like by then we have a story that we've created, that we're weaving the narrative back in history. Mm. And then it's like, how do I change the story? And if I take a break from the story and my chapter stops midway and then, you know, he's taking time out to raise his kids, his daughters, what does it mean to weave back in when the audience has changed? Things have changed since the book was last kind of picked up, you know, to use that analogy maybe.
And I'm also thinking like developmentally, it's interesting. And I think like psychological developmental moments, right? Mm-hmm. And also with reference to other people we've spoken to. So in a way you could say it's completely expected that developmentally, when you're younger, you take more risk. You tend to be impulsive. You tend to have, you believe in yourself, even though you have less history to believe in. I mean, it's pretty much what comes with youth.
Yeah.
So I think people automatically tend to take risks more in their youth and tend to take them less as they get older. And what we found, I think, with a lot of the interviews is that people find it difficult to take the risks in midlife, right?
Yes.
Because now they're in the story that you've just been describing. They're like, oh, well, you know, when I was 18, I could have made that risk.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I could do it now. And I'm thinking about the interview with Lisa Marciano, where we kind of called that a slow burn. So she kind of had the faint calling and followed the calling. And then in midlife, this thing opened up. Whereas Brian, it's kind of like the reverse. There was a drive. And now at 53, after a pause and after his last book.
Yeah, life scale. Like
yes.
Going through what sounds like is almost like an author's birthing process, where you're reconnecting with your own story, digging into your own inner territory. And then through the process of writing a book, you're discovering more about who you are, what you want to say. And it's funny, isn't it? Because we often teach what it is that we want to learn. And I think as authors, we often write about that which fascinates us, but also we're seeking something in. So it was interesting to hear that piece as well.
I think also, like, you think about context, right? So like the period of time in which he was driven by that drive, where he was at the time, where tech was at that time, and how part of the interesting need. And I think we're in this moment now, and I think we talked about that a little bit, right? Because things are kind of shifting.
Yeah.
But there was no, you know, there were no roles that he was fulfilling at that time.
Yeah.
Right. So that need is also contextual. Like there's this massive vacant hole, I want to say in the market, but I think it's bigger, like in culture.
In culture. Right?
And then you roll into that. And then that feels like that kind of directs you. In this case, it directed him for quite a long time, like like all of the forces crunched something out. Right.
It's almost like, and, you know, you hear about people talking about this in terms of innovation, entrepreneurship, that the growth happens at the edges or at the ecosystem edges where there's change and difference. That's where the greatest biodiversity is. And if you think about it in terms of cycles for new systems and cultural context, but also mapping onto our own stories, if you're at the periphery of something, so tech in the 1990s, which is when he started out, that was an early, early point. That was like, well, pre-wave, pre-social media. And so you are one of the first surfers out into the water before the waves have even begun, but you know that there's something coming. And it's this kind of, again, to mix metaphors, so sorry, but it's a sense of being at the periphery, understanding there's something coming, leading, and then as the wave builds, or in this case, the internet and social media and marketing starts to take form and starts to become more mainstream coming into the center, as it calcifies eventually, as it solidifies and calcifies, your role in that also becomes more fixed because you're no longer at the breaking edge of a wave. You're at something which is a bit more mature. And then our current context with a pandemic, with AI, asks something different. It's like, well, social media is established. Social channels that he built on back in the day, which I also did, well, we all did, you know, Twitter was huge. It's a very different creature than it used to be. And so how do you adapt in an environment where you are one of the first movers, you blaze the trail, people looked to you for guidance, information, and then suddenly the whole landscape has changed, and it's done so quickly and in a way that many people are struggling with. And it's also being in that position where you have this body of knowledge, you have tools, but it's uncharted territory. So it's still like everyone's having to figure it out together at the same time.
The new normal.
The new normal, the next normal. And I mean, it's not normal. It's fucking not, weird.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. So it makes me think of the Hegelian dialectic.
Okay, let's get that.
So the Hegelian dialectic is this idea that there's a thesis, there's an antithesis or antithesis, and then there's a synthesis. So the, you know, this idea comes, it manifests itself. The contrary idea comes. There's kind of a conflict, a dialectic, two different things, and there's a synthesis at the end of it, right? I mean, that happens philosophically, but it also happens in culture and it happens in people, right? And it seems like, yeah, there was the thesis, right? This is the way everything is going. And then that thesis produces, I'm kind of stretching the dialectic a little bit here, right? But that thesis invites an antithesis. So like we're suffering, right? We're suffering from social media. We're suffering from technology. We're suffering from the very thing that was motivating him in the beginning. And now he's looking to explore the antithesis and trying to make a synthesis, I think, right? So it's kind of one model of a way to think about how we develop as human beings in one way, and then there's this other push. I think it came up also slightly different, but in this idea about creativity and drive.
And performance and integrity.
Yes.
Like, again, these points, like, how do you synthesize these seemingly opposing forces?
Yes.
So the other thing I think I want to mention is there's something also, you mentioned earlier about the stage of life and maturation, that the internet has kind of matured almost at the same time that he's reached a point where many folks begin to question more deeply what it is that our lives are about. Time, you know, the amount of time that you have stretching out ahead of you is no longer this vast expanse. Mm-hmm. It becomes a question of how do I make the most of this now, because I'm starting to feel things, see things differently. And I think it's really interesting. For me, it feels like the sense of reckoning of where he is perhaps individually and where many of us find ourselves and what's asked of us now, and then the risks that we need to take to be able to model perhaps a more humane, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, there's qualities of humility and integrity. And he mentioned earlier, like, that when it was earlier in his career, he could just say, do this or don't do this. It was more jostly, more kind of like...
More rigid in a sense.
Yeah, and, there's a playfulness to it, but it's also maybe lower stakes. It feels like everything is slightly more high stakes now.
Well, I thought it was really revealing when he said, I don't think I felt it before. You know, yes. There was this moment where he's like, I'm feeling the anticipation now, where I'm feeling the nature of this change, whereas before it was like, go, go, go.
Yeah.
So I think there is something, about the midlife thing there as well. There's something there about the enforced pause of COVID, which also came up in Hamid's interview. I think a lot of people like forced them to rethink things. But to be able to feel now, and then kind of wonder about what feelings may or may not have been there back then when it was all drive. You know, it's fascinating.
And the other thing also, the emotional intelligence piece, which is so interesting, especially as we dive into eras of way more misinformation. He was talking about going onto TikTok and these other platforms and kind of navigating platforms which will soon be completely washed with AI-generated content. And he's asking questions around authentic leadership, how to pivot to do something where you are reaching people, but you're doing it from a deeper level. Like this. All of the questions, these coming-to-age questions, I think, I just see them as reflected within him and within the macro structure of culture, technology, economic. Like, that there's a lot of similarity there.
And I think I would kind of say, I think that is the antithesis of the moment, right? So I think... You're hearing people talk, and this is the work that you do as well around gathering spaces and stuff like that. And what we're trying to do here, because we are real people at the moment, as far as we're aware, making spaces.
As far as we're aware.
Well, we can get philosophical about it. We could be in a simulation. There's a high chance that we're in a simulation, but that's for another time.
We can delete that bit.
No, we keep that in.
Glitch.
Yes. But what I'm getting at is that people want to make spaces. People are feeling the narrowness and the superficiality of performance. And I feel like that was really coming out in what Brian was talking about. Like, there's this recognition of a need for a kind of performance to get people interested in the thing underneath that. And that's, I'd like to think about that more, because I don't know. I'm not sure. Like, I'm not sure whether we have to get people on TikTok to come, but we might. And I think that's a bigger conversation.
But do we need the psychological Trojan horse?
Yes.
Or is it sufficient to just be like, guys, we need something different here? I would love to believe that the latter is what's possible, that we don't have to play by the rules of the game as we've seen them, as they're emergent, that we can actually change things. But you're still working on social channels. And if you're working in the world of digital marketing, and if you're not, you still have to play in those territories. So it's like,
yes.
Like, and the algorithms still have to work for you. So it has to be engaging in some way. I mean.
Well, if people are going to be listening to us, they might've seen a small clip on Instagram. You know what I mean?
True.
So so we want it to, so it's an open question, like whether you can follow that nudge to a place to do the longer form work around it.
And so there's quite a lot of themes. And I think it would be useful to talk about some of the practical things, resources, principles that we can look to start to navigate this, because it's quite ambiguous, complicated territory, and we don't have answers in terms of yes, do this or do that, But there are tools that we can send people towards to help unpick what might be the next steps. So let's talk about some of the resources that we like. Do you want to start with Richard?
I'm not going to start with Richard because I want to think about the we're going to get to Richard because okay. I really like him. Yeah. But this thing that he said about hindrance and drive first. Yeah. So like about how we understand ourselves as multiple beings.
Yes.
Right. And
yes.
that there's a part that wants to go and there's a part that wants to withdraw. Right. Mm. There's a part that says, I think I can. And there's a part that says, I don't think you can.
Yeah. And the right? procrastination part and the other part that gets you over the, yes. the hump or whatever.
And I think you really have to embrace all of them. And this is contrary to a lot of what happens in coaching where you really kind of amplify the go get 'em bit and nullify the I can't bit. Yeah. You got to bring the I can't bit along and understand yeah. it. And we can point you to some resources, but transactional analysis is really mm-hmm. good at this. It's called script theory. And you think about those different kind of voices. Conventional cognitive behavioral therapy is good at identifying the automatic thoughts and core beliefs that we have about ourselves. But then you always have to go down to feelings, which is where we're going to go into the richer stuff like Richard.
Yeah. Richard Rohr.
Richard Rohr. Yeah.
So Richard Rohr.
So I believe he's a Jesuit. I'll need to double check. Oh, and I don't usually read a lot of people from with a religious background. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he's written this wonderful book called Falling Upward, which is all about the richness that middle life offers you in a much more kind of fulfillment, soul destiny kind of a way, right? So it's not so much strategic how you position yourself to succeed, but how you use the wisdom of the past to move your life forward. And it's a really, really beautiful spiritual book that I really enjoy. I turned 50 this year, so I'm starting Woo-hoo! To look at those midlife books that I never did before. So yeah, that's a big one for me.
And another one that I have not yet read, but has been recommended to us by many, many people, so we might point you towards it here, and you can let us know what you think of it, is What Color is Your Parachute? And there is a new edition out for 2023. Your Guide to a Lifetime of Meaningful Work and Career Success. That's by Richard N. Bowles, and we will link to that as well in the show notes. There's some other more esoteric books.
Yes. So on the Jungian side, this is from, for those of you in the know, more of the archetypal school of Jungian psychology. So that's really, a lot of people find it quite woolly. I find parts of it quite woolly, but parts of it also, I keep reading it. I'm like, this is woolly. And I keep reading it. So there must be, I must be drawn
I'm so
to
compelled.
It. Yes. So James Hillman is a very famous person working in this area. He wrote a book called The Soul's Code, which is all about kind of finding your inner force that drives you forward. Thomas More, Care of the Soul, similar kind of idea. And James Hollis, Finding Meaning in the Second Half of Life. These are all much more about seeking meaning and personal expression in the world.
And if you would like some amazing women authors to read from, one book that I was absolutely captivated by, it's quite an intense read, but I really like that, was by Clarissa Pinkola Estes, and it's Women Who Run With Wolves. That's an amazing book. And again, it's more to do with the dreams that we encounter in our sleeping life, how we can analyze them in such a way as to understand our inner landscape, the ecology of selves that we're constantly in dialogue with. Then Sharon Blackie, who also works in the more sort of mythological space. She's written several books. My favorite of her books by far, just because it was so captivating, is called The Enchanted Life. But she also has recently released a book called Haggitude, which I highly recommend.
I love that.
And If Women Rose Rooted. And then also seeing as we're talking about artist, creativity, drive, like all that kind of side of things, you could also check out Julia Cameron's pioneering book, which is very popular. I think it's been around for 3 decades now, The Artist's Way. And it's kind of really trying to find these bridges between digging deep, finding the soul purpose, finding practical routes to take the next steps, and then practices that you can engage in. Because if you need to find something different to do in your life, it might be that all of those things are really worth your attention and exploration. So maybe have a look at those. And
I would double down on The Artist's Way. And if you can get people to do it with, you know, the accountability partners, we'll be talking about this in our community. But I did The Artist's Way with some accountability partners.
I did years ago.
And what's great about The Artist's Way is there are exercises to do. There are things to implement in your life. It is not a kind of book you should just read through without engaging in it.
Yeah.
Like commit to the process, and it really those processes do really open up that creative side. So if you're struggling to open that up, it's a great guide. And if you can do it with the two or three other people together, I think that there's a really good opportunity in there.
I can't believe, like, I'm the artist. I did the artist. And I've got the book and I haven't read it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. But you do, I mean, you know, you're doing it. I think it's...
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes. So do read that. Any closing thoughts?
Check with your friends whether they have Running with the Wolves before you buy it for them for their birthday.
Yeah, a lot of people have it. It's a really,
yeah, I got it for you for your birthday. You remember? So check first, but it does make a great gift.
It's a great gift. I gifted it to my mom.
Oh, good.
And she loved it.
Did you tell her it was for me?
No.
Okay. Next time.
probably if this makes it really big and then mom watches, she's not going to watch this. Anyway, yes, next time. So yes, thanks for joining us for this review, and we will see you in the next one.
Bye bye.
Ciao.